So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review, man.
Hey, did you hear that they had to close the Pacific Coast Highway in Malibu again? Yeah, another house just slid off Jay Leno's chin. Do you believe they actually paid Jello for this? Hey, what do Monica Lewinsky and Jay Leno have in common? They both suck at their job! Little double entendre there, you know what I mean? And finally, trust me, Leno, when I see you in Sturgis, I'm going to teach you the meaning of punchline! Get it? Give it up! Is this fun or what? Hey, we got a real great show for you tonight.
It's another edition of Review Away. I am John Pollock, joined as always by Wei Ting. And Wei, I noted on Tuesday's show of Review a Raw that I found my energy to be a little down. Mm-hmm. And so I've invested in a sugar-free Red Bull for today's show.
Why sugar-free?
I don't like the regular Red Bull. I will have it if I'm like out somewhere, but if I have my choice, I just prefer the sugar-free. I don't find any difference in taste. And Red Bull, there's a rumor that it's really, really bad for you. So I
figured, it's not a rumor. It's a fact.
Well,
I figured, it says on the can you can't drink more than, what, like two of those in one day?
Vitalizes body and mind.
On the back.
How does it vitalize your body? Recommended dose.
Yeah.
Drink 250 milliliters, in brackets, one can, 1 to 2 times a day as needed.
Yeah.
1 to 2 a day. I would never have two of these.
Well, that's
not true. If it's mixed with something, I would. But straight... one is my limit. I don't even usually typically have these ever during the week.
Hmm.
But
I should look into it.
You're drinking what? You have coffee?
I have a coffee. It's good old coffee. I mean, I'm new to the whole scene.
Of coffee?
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't really drink a lot?
I mean, I drank coffee, but I was never a regular drinker and still not a regular drinker. I only drink it when I need it, such as for these terrible, terrible, terrible late 90s WCW.
Yeah, I'm gonna make a big apology at the end of today's show. But I was the same as you, Wei. I never, ever, ever drank coffee through high school, through university, never. Like, I probably would have a sip, and it was just disgusting. And I think it was our colleague John Ramdean that introduced me to a place where I actually enjoyed having coffee. And now I've progressed to the point where I have two each day, and I'm just absolutely hooked on it. Like, yeah. I don't do any drugs of any sort, but caffeine is the one drug. Like, if
you drink as well,
I drink. That's not a drug.
Sure it is.
Maybe we can debate that too, everybody. I don't want to make any factual statements this week. And believe me, we're gonna get to all the Rush feedback. I don't run away from criticism, and there's plenty this week. But
went through caffeine withdrawal.
I did about a year ago. I would wake up in the morning, and I would start to have these headaches every morning, and it was driving me nuts. And I ended up going to my doctor's because of it, because I was getting somewhat worried about these reoccurring headaches and stuff. It's like, man, what if I have, like, a real problem? And my doctor informed me that he's like, do you drink coffee? I'm like, I drink coffee. And he's like, well, how many do you drink a day? I'm like, 1 to 2. And he's like, well, what size are they? I'm like, oh, the large, usually. And he was like, you know, we consider one cup of coffee to be like half that size. So you're really drinking like 4 a day if you have 2. I'm like, oh, well, that's creative math. And he told me that you're going through caffeine withdrawal and that do the headaches go away when you have your coffee in the morning? I'm like, yeah, they do. It's when I wake up in the first hour, it's like really annoying. And he says, you have to just get off of it completely, like cold turkey. And your body, like the first week or two, it's going to be death.
Yeah.
But then your body will not rely on it anymore and you'll be fine. And I did this for a week and a half and it was brutal. Like, I was just, I don't know if it's so much as a mind thing, but I just feel so sluggish in the morning that I need a coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe I'm not even tired. I just think I am because I don't have a coffee. Anyway, it lasted for a week and a half. I've gone back to drinking coffee, and I don't get any headaches in the morning anymore. So after that week and a half, it's like, fuck this.
You're just like wrestler traveling on the road, you try to rehab yourself, but
my employer has never told me I have to be on caffeine to perform.
It's your own choice.
It's personal choice.
Who knows what people decide to do with their lifestyles? But there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. We are giving our bodies to this business.
We're working way like we're doing like 3 shows a week. You don't understand. Let's get into it. WCW Road Wild. Before we get into this way, did you watch the 24/7 version on YouTube?
I did.
I did too.
There were some noticeable changes.
Very noticeable changes.
We'll get to all that.
Yep.
Do you want to get into a bit of the context leading up to this show?
Yes, we definitely should. Because the prior month, WCW did their most successful pay-per-view in history in terms of pay-per-view buys. It was Diamond Dallas Page and Karl Malone against Hulk Hogan and Dennis Rodman. And this was a hell of a coup for WCW because we were coming off the 98 NBA Finals where Karl Malone, the Utah Jazz, and Rodman with the Bulls had just been in the finals together, and they even got publicity because during the finals, Rodman skipped one of the team practices to go to Nitro. So this got on all the sports shows of showing Rodman at Nitro, tons of publicity. So WCW seeing this, well, this was great, bringing in two outsiders to wrestle on our pay-per-view. Who can we get next? And unfortunately, their answer was Jay Leno, the comedian, who got Hogan and Bischoff onto his show. They did a bunch of angles on The Tonight Show.
Jay Leno.
And it resulted in, I would say, maybe one of the worst couple of segments in WCW history, where Eric Bischoff did his own mock monologues called NWO Nightcap, where he'd come out and he'd repeat Jay Leno's monologues, and the crowd would be dead for this legitimately. And I remember these monologues so well because it was the first time I can ever recall I fell asleep during a wrestling program. And I would have been 14 at the time here.
And you didn't have the option to switch to Raw because you got Nitros on, what, Wednesday?
Yeah, we got it like late Wednesday or like well later in the week. And I think Nitro was only, it would have been 3 hours at the time. I don't know if they cut it down to 2 or aired it as 3, but this was the first time I can ever recall falling asleep during a wrestling segment. It's happened many, many times since then. It happened to Way this past Sunday at SummerSlam. And it was just horrible. And it led to this tag match, Diamond Dallas Page and Jay Leno against Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff as your main event. I don't know what is the draw here. I don't understand, like, even a casual fan wanting to see Jay Leno wrestle. Karl Malone and Rodman, I think, made total sense.
I'd read that Jay Leno was chosen for this pay-per-view. Road Wild from Sturgis, their annual pay-per-view from Sturgis. And Sturgis, for those who don't know, I suppose is an annual convention.
Bike rally, yeah.
Rally, where the city is basically shut down for all these bikers to come in and as a part of the festivities, WCW would host this pay-per-view and allow anybody who wanted to show up to just show up.
For free.
And watch.
So this was completely geared towards making money on pay-per-view. And but yeah, they never took in a dollar for these gates. No. They were like the Impact tapings of pay-per-view.
Exactly. And I had read that Jay Leno was a big motorcycle fan. And
oh, he's a huge car guy.
That's
like,
right.
That's what he's really well known for.
And so that's why he was brought into Sturgis to headline Road Wild.
Wow.
1998.
So that's the big hook going into this show, Way. August the 8th, 1998. I'm not going to ask what you were doing here because I don't remember what I was up to. August 98.
This was my the summer.
I was about to start grade 9. In high school.
I think we were about to start grade 8.
No, 98.
Oh, yeah. No, who cares?
Whatever. I don't. Our announcers for tonight are Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, and Mike Tenay. Schiavone promises one of the most exciting nights ever. First live the evening. They promote tonight's main event tag match. There's going to be a battle royal, and Travis Tritt is going to be in concert. He's going to hold a concert. One thing that I did approve of 24/7 in their editing. Then we go to Mean Gene Okerlund, who is with American Iron Horse doing a promo for this motorcycle company, and he's on this giant motorcycle looking so out of place for Mean Gene Okerlund to be. And that leads us to our opening match, way. And back in the day in WCW, matches would always, WCW pay-per-views, they were always known for having their exciting undercard and hot opener. This one was the Barbarian against Ming to start us off at Road Wild. The Barbarian is accompanied by Jimmy Hart, and Ming is a babyface now, the former Faces of Fear. We see a pile driver by Ming. He then misses a splash. The Barbarian hits an overhead suplex to Ming off of the top rope. I will give Ming credit that this guy was could move.
How old was he at the time?
Oh, he had to be north of 40 at this point. Both had to be around that 35 to 40 plus.
Yes.
I would say over 40 for Ming for sure. Because these two were, Christ, they were in the mid-80s working in the WWF. This was 98.
I got to say, these two, as you mentioned, are former tag team partners in the Faces of Fear. With that said, the announcers did absolutely nothing to build up on that fact and also on any semblance of a storyline for this match. You hear, I don't know if this was the first time that they had wrestled each other or if this was just another match, but I figured I would have had to watch the TV to see some sort of split. But then Schiavone says, I don't know what caused these two men to split up. So here we have two tag team partners wrestling each other, but none of the commentators are aware of the storyline. Thus, how could I care about the outcome of this match? Like, imagine if this was MMA. You have, like, two teammates, Josh Koscheck versus John Fitch. Imagine the build-up for that fight.
Coming up next, we don't know why these two are fighting.
Here you have two longtime tag team partners with a ton of history, and the announcers simply say, I don't know what caused these two men to split up.
The announcers bring up then 3 years of presenting Road Wild. It's never rained at Sturgis, and at this point I was praying it would rain on these fuckers. They debate if either of these men can feel pain, as each are selling. Then we see Ming go after Jimmy Hart, and the Barbarian grabs him by the back of the neck. They get back into the ring. Ming no-sells a back body drop, then applies the Tongan death grip to pin the Barbarian for the win. After the match, Ming attacks Jimmy Hart. Then Hugh Morris comes out, and Hugh and the Barbarian attack Ming. Jimmy Hart hits the worst splash you've ever seen in your life. Ming then makes a comeback. Then the heels come back after this, and Hugh Morris hits the No Laughing Matter moonsault. And then who comes to the savior of Ming? Hacksaw Jim Duggan, wielding his 2x4. And all I could look at here was the age of these guys. We have Jim Duggan, Ming, the Barbarian, Jimmy Hart. These guys were all like mid-80s WWF stars. And here they are in 1998, focal points in WCW.
And they're proven to be ratings draws.
The highlight of this was Tony Schiavone, after the beatdown, stating, we forgot to mention who won. Which puts a nice exclamation point on this match. Who cared? Not Tony Schiavone.
And not us. Like, it was just, the booking was completely formulaic. Just have some non-finish, and or just have some random finish, and just have a bunch of guys running.
So you don't even care. Schiavone notes that this annual Sturgis rally attracts 360,000 visitors, 200,000 motorcycles, and $0 brought in by WCW for all of this. Up next, Way, is our tag match with the Disco Inferno and Alex Wright taking on Public Enemy. I've always noted with Alex Wright, the two greatest things about this guy were his dance, his armpit dance, and his theme music. And one of the two was edited out by 24/7. He got this random techno shit. Why would they get rid of his music?
It must have been copywritten. His generic techno theme.
Wouldn't that? It was a WCW theme. They own it.
I don't know. I don't know why.
Some they also own Bill Goldberg's theme song that they chose to replace.
Well, we'll get to that. Okay. They don't exactly. Crowd loves disco, and yeah, as you said, Alex Wright, I don't think as much. I mean, here's a guy who's decked in a leather jacket and orange underwear walking out to a crowd of bikers.
Yeah.
To techno music.
He's a heel. Mike Tenay actually brings up during the entrance that Alex Wright is not connecting with the crowd. Then Tokyo Magnum runs out, who was working with WCW at the time, comes out to dance with them.
No entrance music, no nothing, just pretty much trails behind.
Yeah, exactly. What was funny is that Tokyo Magnum's role was just standing on the apron outside the ring, or on the floor, and he was the best worker of the five men that were out in this match. It starts as a wrestling match, but then turns into a hardcore match. Shivani starts asking why there's a why there isn't a disqualification because they're using a trash can, and then the rules are just being changed on the fly. Rocco Rock then grabs a ladder. Disco and Alex Wright bring out a table, and they officially make it a street fight. We see lots of plunder shots. They tease putting Alex Wright through the table, but Disco cuts off Rocco Rock. Then Alex Wright brings in a kitchen sink, which the first time I saw someone use a kitchen sink in a hardcore match, it was funny. This drew no reaction at all. The announcers just told jokes throughout this entire match as these guys were doing their hardcore match. Tokyo comes in, Rocco ducks, and Tokyo hits Alex Wright. Alex Wright's pissed off and just leaves the ring. Then Rocco Rock hits a ladder. He flips up and totally misses Disco Inferno with this flip. And Shivani just refers to this as
seesaw,
a mess.
The seesaw
spot. The seesaw spot, yes. Shivani calls this a mess. Tokyo Magnum then ditches Disco. And we see a three tables stacked up on one another. They climb up a ladder, put Disco on the top table, and then Rocco Rock climbs up a scaffold at the ring area, this lighting truss, jumps off and goes through, and Heenan howls with laughter as the three tables break. They all go through cutting their jokes. Grunge then attempts a pin. Magnum Tokyo comes back, misses a splash and hits Disco. And then Johnny Grunge pins Disco Inferno. This match lasted forever, and the announcers were atrocious.
What was so bad about the announcers, and I wouldn't even fault the announcers, I would just fault the overall production of WCW, was that as you saw in the previous match, and as you would later see throughout the evening, I suppose they weren't prepped for any of the storyline points to hit before the match. They didn't see
a
rundown.
How does it not come
up
in their rundown that this is going to become a hardcore match? Ugh. The announcers were like deer in the headlights during this match.
They had no idea. At one point, when they started hitting each other with the weapons, and they never officially announced that this was a street fight, the announcers themselves just decided to take it upon themselves to announce to the audience, well, I suppose this is now a street fight. And Tenay goes on and on about how we're now in public enemy's territory, and builds up the whole street fight thing. Meanwhile, the workers don't know this, and so it's only afterwards that the referee shouts to the announcer to announce that officially it has now been a street fight. But we at home have already heard it.
Terrible.
It's just such a mess of a production.
We go to Lee Marshall, who's on WCWWrestling.com, with Dean Malenko, who will be tonight's guest referee for the Chris Jericho Juventud Guerrero match. Dean Malenko says nothing. And that leads us to our three-way match. Raven, accompanied by Lodi, who comes out with his signs that read, Sturgis is for losers and they're fat, with the grammatical mistake spelling their, T-H-E-I-R, instead of the appropriate T-H-E-Y apostrophe. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And also, we hate Harleys. He had another sign that read that.
Yeah. Raven's taking on Perry Saturn and Canyon. It's falls count anywhere within the city limits. So they can't go outside of Sturgis. They have to stay inside of Sturgis to end this match.
Anywhere within the city.
What was Perry Saturn wearing?
Wasn't he wearing tights with like a biker chain? With
he
like
had
sort of wallet
a
chain?
80s style vest on, glasses, and a bandana, and had a mohawk. This guy like was transported into this match from 1982.
I'd like to know what he's like outside of wrestling. I'd like to know what type of things he's actually into.
He's got a tattoo on his face.
What influence? Oh, he does now. What influences his look? He just seems like an interesting man.
Yeah. Interesting. Raven tells Canyon to get him to start the match. Canyon and Saturn then decide to work together. We see a chair shot by Raven to both, which Mike Tenay calls the doubleheader. They fight to the stage right by the entranceway. We see a double jawbreaker spot, and Shivani notes, this is why fans order these pay-per-views.
To see
a double jawbreaker.
To see amazing things. He's like, well, there you have it again, folks. Just another thing we've never seen before in professional wrestling.
What a shill this guy is. We should note at this point, three matches in, the crowd here was fucking terrible.
Oh, they were completely dead. And do you blame them?
Like, not really. They gave nothing worth seeing. But at the same time,
two Thunder matches in a row.
And this one, they booked the same spot where Canyon climbs the lighting truss and misses a splash to Raven. Like, would a road agent not catch this spot that we're going to do this two matches in a row?
It
just came off as so lazy.
It all just reminded me of, like, a Backyard Wrestling Federation where you just have guys
doing shit,
hitting each other with chairs and ladders in the daylight. You know, they're always outdoors.
Yeah, I didn't like this outdoor environment at all. When Canyon went to hit that splash off the truss, Lodi pulled him away. Inside the ring, Saturn hit a Death Valley driver to Raven, but Lodi once again made the save. Then a Horace Hogan runs in with a stop sign. He hits Lodi and Raven. Then Saturn delivers a German suplex to Horace and hits another DVD to Raven, and Perry Saturn gets your victory here. A match that the crowd definitely was hurt by, and if I was booking this show, I would have looked at the Public Enemy match and this three-way, and I would have picked one of them.
I hated this match.
Bad placement, putting these two back-to-back.
Oh, God.
Denway.
Second match. That was a third match. That was a third match.
God. We forgot about Ming and the Barbarian. In our Groundhog Day match, Psychosis takes on Rey Mysterio in a number one contenders match. This is the third Psychosis-Rey Mysterio match we have reviewed in the last month now between Bash at the Beach, One Night Stand, and this. And I have to say that after watching all three of them, two of them, big letdowns, this being one of them.
Yeah, I mean,
Rey, in fairness, Rey had just come back from knee surgery the month prior, and he was definitely playing it safe in this match.
By no means was this a bad match.
It's the best match on the card up to this point, but that's not saying a lot. These two, I expected more in this match, but...
Alright, well, at the very least, following the previous three matches, I was so happy to see these two, even if it was the 15th time we'd seen the two together.
One line of Shivani's I did enjoy. It's one thing for me and Wei to say that this match will probably be better than the last two, but then Shivani stated right on the pay-per-view that this will be better than the last two matches.
Oh,
great. Yeah. We see an ankle lock scissor takeover by Rey early on for a two count. We see a body press to Rey, who lands on his stomach. Then a cartwheel onto the shoulders of Psychosis and into a Hurricane Rana. As I mentioned, this was a much more grounded match for Rey coming off his surgery. There was a Hurricane Rana off the top rope by Psychosis. He chose his high spots pretty carefully in this. Rey came back with a drop kick to Psychosis and off the top to the floor. Then we see a springboard into a sunset flip by Rey for another two count. Psychosis misses a running drop kick as he goes into the ropes legs first and allows Rey to hit what is now known as the West Coast Pop for the victory.
Psychosis took the bump right on his head. I guess he didn't fully...
He took it a real...
They didn't fully rotate, but thank goodness it was for the finish.
Could have jarred his neck or something. It looked really bad.
But it did work out because it was a good-looking finish as a result. At one point, there was a man in the crowd that chanted boring at this match. But you can't really fault the guy. It just goes to show it's tough to get into any match if you don't know who the competitors are or what they're fighting for.
I don't know if they had a lot of video packages building up some of these matches, but there were none on this show. So I don't know if that was a 24/7 edit or if this was how this pay-per-view went. But we go immediately now to Chavo Guerrero coming out. Remember Pepe?
Yes.
His pet horse,
mm-hmm.
The fake horse. He comes out with Pepe. Then Stevie Ray comes out, and I'm dreading this match. Stevie Ray apparently was the television champion at this point. And Chavo insists that he is the television champion and asks for the title. And that leads to our match, Wei.
Chavo there was no grace in his delivery. At this point in his career, he was a terrible promo. He just came out really excited. like somebody who was speaking in a public forum for the first time. They were very energetic and enthusiastic, but they just came across too enthusiastic and not controlled, and just seemed like he really liked the sound of his voice. He tried to put over this thing about a contract that he had written for himself about how that he's supposed to get the TV title as a result, but it came across pretty bad.
Stevie Ray just towered over Chavo. The size discrepancy was humongous here. Chavo tries to shake hands with Stevie to start the match, but Stevie refuses. The game plan is that Chavo would go to the floor and run away to wear out Stevie. This worked for 2 minutes. Then Stevie caught him and hit him with the slapjack and pinned him. Then Stevie cuts a promo saying he isn't a joke. Then Eddie Guerrero comes to the ring.
And does nothing.
He offers to help Chavo, and Chavo refuses. I was so angry, stating that on a card that is desperate for a good match, Eddie Guerrero was just sitting backstage for this entire show.
Yeah, really odd. I don't think the announcers did anything again.
I don't believe he was injured at this point.
Yeah. It was just all these poorly executed, confusing angles. They would take place, and the announcers didn't know what was going on, so they couldn't emphasize the story points that needed to be emphasized.
Lee Marshall is back with WCWWrestling.com, and they're interviewing Chris Jericho, who cuts a promo on Dino Machino and Quasi Juice. And
a very different type of heel than what he plays.
Yeah,
today.
He was just playing the
obnoxious, the mature.
Yes, rock star, I guess. Then Rick Steiner comes down to the ring. I'm like, wow, this card just keeps getting better and better. And then J.J. Dillon interrupts him, saying that the match isn't happening tonight. And I'm thinking, what match? And Dillon states that Rick Steiner hit his brother in the head with a chair and that Scott cannot wrestle. So we were not going to get Steiner versus Steiner. So for those of you that bought the pay-per-view for this brother versus brother match, fuck you.
Was this not right after? Like, did they do a Steiner versus Steiner match before this?
No.
This was supposed to be the first time that the two would fight each other, right?
Yep.
Now, like, I'm not the biggest fan of either of these guys, but if I'm a longtime fan of the Steiner brothers and you're selling this match to me, like, this is a legitimate
on paper,
drawing
that's a
match.
Like, look at this card. There's not a whole lot outside of the main event that's drawing, and I would say the first meeting of these two, I'm sure they've wrestled at some point in the past. But this was the first time since they had broken up the tag team in WCW that they were going to have a match.
Why would they do this? Why would they tease, first of all, sell this, and on the pay-per-view, tease that they would have the match, and then just have Dillon come out and say, no, you're not going to get the match now. You're going to get it next month at Fall Brawl.
Well, first of all, Buff Bagwell came out with a neck collar, and Scott Steiner was on a stretcher with a neck collar, a leg cast, and an arm cast. And Buff repeated what Dillon said, stating that they have a doctor's note and he can't wrestle. And Dillon states that that's true. You cannot wrestle tonight. But WCW has the right to rebook this match 45 days later and says they will face off at Fall Brawl on September the 13th. I don't know why he didn't just say 30 days, because Fall Brawl took place 36 days after Road Wild. And you'll love this way. Fall Brawl, they would do the exact same thing.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
They would not wrestle until Halloween Havoc.
Wow.
In October.
Holy shit. This is the equivalent of selling an apple to a customer. And then after they hand you the money, you take the apple back, and then you say, you're going to have to pay me for that again. Twice.
And then take it away again. Scott jumps up from the stretcher and runs to the back after this announcement. So the injury was bullshit, and J.J. Dillon had no jurisdiction over this. So I guess they were trying to imply that Scott Steiner had a mark doctor who wrote a fake note for him.
Okay. Amazing.
I wonder if Scott Steiner has certain hookups with doctors.
Huh.
Then, you know, I completely regret picking this show, but this next match has to be reviewed. Because of all the terrible matches in wrestling history, this one has gotten a pass throughout history. This is in my top 10 worst matches of all time. Bryan Adams versus Steve McMichael. How has this match lasted for 12 years, and no one has brought this up. This is one of the worst wrestling matches ever.
Brian Alvarez did bring it up in The Death of WCW.
Oh, okay, you're reading that book now. Okay,
he does cite it as, in talking about this match and the main event, he cites this match in particular as the worst match on the show and setting a new standard for poor matches.
Because you never hear, I have no clue this match was on this card. I've never even heard about this match.
Yes.
Wow, was this bad. Horrible wrestling. They fucked up a clothesline spot. McMichael cannot take bumps. That's the issue. He cannot take a bump onto his back. They did a move where Adams came off the ropes and McMichael did something. I don't know what. For the life of me, I don't know what he was trying to do, but it ended up with McMichael having a front guillotine onto Brian Adams. It was so bad. And then they just fell to the floor. And Mike Tenay referred to this as unique, which was true. Then McMichael is taken down after a boot to the corner fails. Adams tries to grab McMichael by the throat and fucked that up. Couldn't grab him by the throat. Then, in the highlight of the match, Adams lifts up McMichael for a pile driver. But you see, they had to do a ref bump. So
this is so weird.
McMichael gets lifted up, and he has to kick the referee in the head, but he misses. He kicks Billy Silverman, I swear to God, in the fingers. And Billy Silverman sells it.
He's out cold
from this kick to the hand. Oh, my God. Vincent then gets on the apron, goes to hit McMichael with a chair, misses, hits Adams, and then McMichael, the greenest worker on the roster, has been given a pile driver as his finish, gives the pile driver to Brian Adams, who must be the most trustful person in the industry, and McMichael gets the victory. This was absolutely horrible, and you must watch this match. Just the fact that it exists. Wow. One of the worst matches I have ever seen in my life. Brian Adams is a graduate of the New Japan Pro Wrestling Dojo. How?
At one point in this match, Tony Schiavone has the idea to compare this match and to compare Steve Mongo McMichael to Rey Mysterio. And this comparison is simply, they're both men who won't stay down.
That's because McMichael is so uncoordinated on his feet. Oh,
the only time
God.
You will ever hear anyone compare these two. I use YouTube's new HTML5 feature, and I was able to watch this match at 1.5 times the speed. And it was still slower than any normal match that I've seen.
Oh, my God. I would be curious to go back to the 98 Observer Awards and see where this finished for worst match of the year, because I thought this was worse than the main event.
Easily worse. Oh, yeah.
Holy shit. Brian Adams versus Steve McMichael, Road Wild, 1998.
And just the booking of the match itself, too. The ref bumps were awful. They did, for the second time on the show, they did the thing where one guy grabs his opponent for his friend to attack, and amazingly, Mongo would move out of the way, and Vincent would hit Brian Adams. They did this for the second time. They did this in the Public Enemy match as well.
Oh. Gene Okerlund is with the American Iron Horse girls as he sits on his bike, and he asks the girls if they're going to have fun tonight.
And they say, woo!
Chris Jericho versus Juventud Guerrero for the Cruiserweight Championship with Dean Malenko as the special referee. They replaced Chris Jericho's music.
They did. I don't know why. Because they kept Ravens. Ravens is a... Jericho, of course, came out to rip off of Even Flow by Pearl Jam. But they changed it enough, from what I recall, so that they wouldn't get in trouble like they would. But it was odd since they kept Ravens Nirvana ripoff theme.
You know, I don't have 24/7. I don't really watch it. But my God, if you're an ECW fan, they must just hack the shit out of those. Like, there's no way any of those theme songs are getting played.
Yeah, I'm sure. They do.
Brutal.
Jericho comes out in a kimono.
Yes, I wrote that down.
And then I see a sign in the crowd. Some guy in the crowd advertises his ICQ number.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a great sign.
Yeah.
Awesome. Jericho cuts a promo on motorcycle drivers and said that he drives a Honda motorcycle. Heenan estimates that there are 35,000 to 40,000 people on hand here. Jericho goes on offense for the majority of the start until Juventud reverses a vertical suplex. We see a German suplex by Jericho, but Juve lands on his feet, then runs for a Hurricane Rana, but takes a big power bomb from Jericho. Jericho delivers a big chop and a woo, and Ric Flair, of course, was off TV at this time. There's a power bomb countered into a DDT by Juve for a near fall. Both were on their backs, teasing a 10 count, but Juve rolls over for a 2 count. Jericho then applies the walls, but Juve reaches the ropes, and Jericho insists that Juventud Guerrera gave up. Then Juventud accidentally pokes Dean Malenko in the eye. Jericho then hits a belt shot and slaps Malenko, who still counts, but Juve kicks out.
Throughout this whole match, they were teasing whether or not Dean Malenko would be favoring one guy over another. And then Dean Malenko, he would count, and the pace would be like... it would be like the most robotic thing that you would ever see. And I just... Shivani, they did a thing with the announcers where Shivani thought Malenko was slowing down, but Heenan and Tanay didn't think so. And I just... I thought it was fun because I started to enjoy studying the subtle changes in pace of Dean Malenko's counts. And I was hoping for an angle where Dean would actually minusculely increase the pace of his counts after everyone. But
you put way too much thought into
They didn't end up doing it.
The finish comes when Hoovy's on the turnbuckles and Malenko pulls him down. Then Jericho just kicks Malenko. Hoovy runs into Dean and Malenko just launches Hoovy over his head into a Hurricane Run onto Jericho off the top rope, and Juventud gets the win and is your new Cruiserweight champion.
Yes. I think matches like this, aside from the previous matchup, matches like this are worth watching just because you see a main eventer that we see these days, like Chris Jericho, in matches against the most mobile opponents of his career. I think that makes looking back at these shows worthwhile.
Then up next we have a Battle Royal featuring NWO Hollywood, NWO Wolfpack, and your WCW champion Bill Goldberg. Why your world champion is in a battle royal, I'm not quite sure. The participants for this, aside from Bill Goldberg, are Scott Hall, The Giant, Kurt Hennig, Scott Norton, Kevin Nash, Sting, Conan, and Lex Luger. 9-person battle royal, and you can be eliminated by going over the top rope, being pinned, or submitting.
Keep in mind that for this Road Wild show, the ring that they wrestle in...
Tiny.
Well, no.
And also elevated.
It's the same size, but yes, it was on an elevated platform. So the area surrounding the ring, you have to walk up steps into it. So earlier, Psychosis did a plancha off the top turnbuckle and to the floor, which meant that he had to jump twice the length that he would normally jump because you had the ring, the ringside area, and then the actual ground. Keep it with that in mind. Is an over the top rope battle royal the smartest type of match to book for a setup like this, where you have guys like Scott Hall taking bumps over the top rope and onto this small patch of ring, risking their heads to not fall? And you mentioned earlier, John, that WWE 24/7 changed Bill Goldberg's music,
yes,
on this to his WWF version of his theme.
Yes.
And you may be asking why they would do this. Wasn't Goldberg's theme an original WCW creation? The answer is no.
Ah.
I did some research, and I found the composer. His name is Christian Poulet. And here's an article on Christian Poulet. It reads, "Christian Poulet in the grips of muscular piracy. Over the past 15 years, Christian Poulet has composed musical scores for many different films and collected on a dozen CDs. They are frequently played throughout the world. After recently creating his official website, the composer was amazed to discover that one of his tunes, Invasion, co-written by Jean-Yves Rigaud is being played as the opening music for U.S. wrestling hunk Goldberg's bouts in the ring.
Hunk.
It also features on a WCW tribute CD and video game. Nobody had approached Christian for his permission, and Goldberg is certainly ignorant of the origins of his new personal anthem. Chances are, had he known, the champion would have invited the musician to New York to congratulate him with a muscular bear hug, as finely tuned as the composer's own piano. So WCW
stole the theme song.
Stole this song from some film soundtrack, put it in a video game, put it on a CD of wrestling themes.
Wow.
And so WWE had to get Jim Johnston to redo the song.
Wow. I can't believe. That was like one of the most well-known theme songs in WCW history. And that was a giant, I won't say giant, but I hated that they redid his song when he came
to
WWE. It was just,
me too.
At the time, it was like, why are you fucking around with this? And everyone blamed the WWE. Granted, it didn't sound like this guy was looking for the biggest payday of all time. I'm sure he just wanted, you know, don't steal my shit without at least asking for it. Like, the guy probably would have maybe given it to him, but at least taken something small.
Turner.
Doesn't sound like he wanted a. What didn't sue them as a result. So, anyway,
he may have. I don't know.
Good job, Way, on that find.
Yeah.
Scott Hall was eliminated right away. He had no interest in working on this show. He went for an outsider edge, and his back body dropped over the top rope by Goldberg. Kevin Nash, in his political best, just eliminated himself to go after Scott Hall.
He won't even job in
Amazing.
Battle Royal.
No, fuck that. Shivani says the Giant wants to send a message out to wrestlers and promoters all around the world, which I guess was a shoot because a couple months later he'd leave for the WWE. Conan was hit with a spear and thrown over the top rope by Goldberg. Hennig was hit with a spear and thrown over the top by by Goldberg. Norton and Sting were fighting against the ropes. Goldberg sent them over the top rope. Then Giant throws Luger over the top rope. Choke slam by Giant. Goldberg no-sells by sitting up like the Undertaker. Hits a spear. And then the jackhammer on Big Show / the Giant for the win. A very nothing battle royal. And I don't know why Goldberg was booked outside of the main event for this show.
I had no problems whatsoever with them putting all these NWO guys in the same match. I didn't care to see any of them in a singles match.
I agree.
But, I was going to say, did Goldberg wrestle the Giant before this at all?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I think that was the first time they did that jackhammer spot with the Giant, unless they did it on a Nitro or something.
Now, with this clean finish, it ruins.
Why would you go back to that match?
Absolutely. Why would I pay to see Giant versus Goldberg?
To me, I wouldn't. There's no way I would have had Goldberg pinned or anything in this match, but you easily could have had it down to these two, and the Giant just throws him over the top rope. Perfectly believable. Doesn't affect his win streak by him being pinned or submitted, and you have a title program to go to in September.
And you tease whether or not Bill Goldberg can lift the Giant up for this jackhammer.
Absolutely.
Not give it away on this nothing show.
Yeah. Throwing Goldberg over the top rope would not have hurt him in the least in this match, especially after he eliminated all these guys. That brings us to our main event, Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff, accompanied by Elizabeth and Ed Leslie, taking on Diamond Dallas Page and Jay Leno with Kevin Eubanks in their corner. Bischoff is introduced as a martial arts black belt.
Do you know who was doing the introductions?
I didn't know who it was, but it was not Michael Buffer.
It was not Michael Buffer. If you look up the match itself, you'll find a different version. You'll find the original version on YouTube. But in this WWE 24/7 thing, they completely chopped up Michael Buffer because they couldn't use the songs that the guys would come out to. They couldn't use Voodoo Child with Hulk Hogan. So they used the NWO theme instead. And they had Justin Roberts, drowned in reverb, announce the same word-for-word introduction that Michael Buffer did.
And then
Justin Roberts makes an appearance on this WCW amazing 1998 show.
Did Jay Leno and DDP, was that their actual theme? They came out to like this shitty Tonight Show ripoff theme.
They came out to some generic 60s big band
stock
track. They originally came out to the Tonight Show theme.
Okay.
The theme song that they actually use for the TV show.
So, Leno comes out with a cup of water and throws it onto Hogan and Bischoff. The big spot early is Leno slapping Hogan. This was so basic, this match. It was like Hogan doing so little, but this match got the best reaction of pretty much anything on the show outside of Bill Goldberg.
It was pretty much as you could do with somebody
exactly.
like Jay Leno.
Bischoff gets in, and they build up to a hot tag for Leno, where Heenan yells, "Here's Jay!" Bischoff would tag in Hogan immediately. There were two spots where Hogan goes for a collar and elbow tie-up, but Leno ducks away and then tags in DDP. We see a double clothesline spot by DDP and Leno to Hogan that looked very, very bad. Leno actually got a near fall on Hulk Hogan. Hogan then hit DDP with a loaded glove, but Bischoff can only get a two count on Page. Then Bischoff hits a thumb to the eye of Leno and proclaims, "He is going to be the queen of comedy," and then takes a low blow by Leno. Terrible punches by Leno during this match. Then Hogan hits Bischoff after Leno gets out of the way. DDP clotheslines Hogan over the top. Then Kevin Eubanks gets into the ring, hits a diamond cutter on Eric Bischoff, and Leno gets the pinfall as Tony Schiavone proclaims that Leno is still the king of late-night comedy. And after the match away, Hogan and Bischoff attack both men. Goldberg makes the save with a double spear to Hogan and Bischoff. And we finish the show with Goldberg, DDP, Jay Leno, and Kevin Eubanks in the ring.
And Tony Schiavone, in classic overstating fashion, says, "We have witnessed not only professional wrestling history, but entertainment history as well."
Oh, God. This is why people hated Tony Schiavone
Hollywood,
at this point.
Hollywood was never quite the same.
And
Halloween Havoc.
To avoid more copyright problems, I was dreading this, but WWE 24/7 cut out the Travis Tritt concert.
Oh, shit.
I actually looked it up on YouTube to see if I could find it, and it was not posted anywhere, and I did not go out of my way to find it. So
I can't say I didn't get a kick out of seeing the host of The Tonight Show do all that, as bad as it was. Like, Jay Leno basically put on a performance where, like a caricature of what a pro wrestler is supposed to be. Like, he acts like he really hates the guy, but he's overacting, and you know he doesn't really have any reason to be doing it other than the fact that they're paying him tons and tons of money to do it.
And from those people that were actually directly involved with helping Jay Leno get ready, everyone said how hard this guy, like, actually worked. Like, he would come in super early to do training and stuff and didn't want to look like a joke on pay-per-view. And the guy took it seriously and was really in a position where he didn't need to.
Good.
So you at least have to give him credit for that. And I'm sure a lot of the money he made on this probably went to a charity of some sort. But that was Road Wild. I thought a pretty shitty pay-per-view.
Pretty bad show.
Giving it a 1.5 out of 10. I didn't enjoy much on this show. And I guess you can go back and forth. At first, I was kind of thinking, you know, should Bill Goldberg really have been in that spot in the main event with Jay Leno, perhaps? But they were building eventually that Goldberg-DDP match later in the year. And I'm sure DDP kind of had something to do with helping to put all this stuff together. So
yeah,
he got the main event spot. At least they put Goldberg there in the closing shot.
The undercard on this show was just terrible.
By WCW standards, their undercard was always one of their strengths, and this was a weakness. There was, I don't know.
Ray Psychosis and Jericho Hoovy, they were good, as you'd expect, but nothing special in the end. And just overall, poorly executed storylines that the announcers weren't privy to.
This was a bad time for WCW because they were still doing really, really well on pay-per-view, still drawing at house shows. Nitro ratings were still really solid, but you look at these shows, and all their shows kind of reflected this. They were falling apart here.
They were starting to definitely lose
ground. And anyone that paid close attention knew that this current popularity wave was, they were on the decline, and WWE was on the rise. And
yeah.
WWE had already passed them in the ratings at this point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, but this summer of 98 was probably the peak for pro wrestling over the past 20 years.
Yeah.
That summer, it was two really, really strong products in terms of numbers and business.
The main event for this show didn't, I don't think to me it was as bad as I expected.
No, because I saw Steve McMichael and Bryan Adams before, and that was way worse.
They managed to somewhat protect Leno and Bischoff by limiting their performances. But with that said, angles like this felt like WrestleMania 1. You know, where they use these celebrities in these capacities. It was so unbelievable. But at least they didn't make Leno their champion. That was to come later.
Yeah, that would be
I give it a 3.
All right. So that was WCW Road Wild from 1998. We'll get into your feedback now because there's a ton of feedback to get to here. We'll start off with Eric Creamer. For some reason, Facebook is not letting me post to Raw's page, so I'm sending this sucker in. Hey guys, just wanted to weigh in on the popularity of Rush to people outside of Canada. Not only was Rush's popularity in the US to a point where one character in the movie Fanboys allowed nothing but Rush to be played on their trip, but they were also featured on the soundtrack for South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut, giving their rendition of O Canada. Seeing as how these have been seen and heard by a very large audience, it is safe to assume that even a basic knowledge of the band is widespread.
Any response?
Hey, I will agree. Rush, obviously, a big band to some. But this specific point, I don't know if it necessarily counters what I said, where they're doing a rendition of O Canada on a South Park album. Would they have been using Rush on that album for anything else other than a Canadian-themed song? Probably not.
Maybe not.
But I'll get more angry emails about that. Actually, there's many more.
Jeremy Levine. Way, I think I heard you say that you didn't like the Santa with Muscles review that you did. That was the first show I heard you guys do. The review was just so ridiculous that I listened to it twice, once to help me fall asleep.
Thanks.
You made it sound like the most random film ever made.
It was.
I think you guys should do another movie review as it would feel like a fresh break from reviewing old pay-per-views or shows. I've listened to every show since, but Santa with Muscles is still my favorite review from you guys. It was your pure hate for the film that left me wanting more. P.S. I personally don't listen to the Jersey Shore review. I do feel like I'm missing out, though. I love listening to you guys so much that I don't really want to stop the audio. Maybe this is why some others give you heat for reviewing the show. They love your voices so much that they would listen to you say anything.
That's not true.
Wow. I just skipped the section of the podcast at the end to hear the feedback. I also think that the intro clip you played last week for Reveal Raw was very good, and that it should be implemented in as a mainstay. After the Miz's promo at SummerSlam, I think John Pollock should be up for promo of the year with his tantrum about Jersey Shore haters. However, much like Dixie Carter, I guess that's just him being real.
Yeah, we're always real on this show. Harry Randall. I've been a listener of the show for many years now and love the show when I'm on the train to work. I recently met Stone Cold Steve Austin in a hotel near my house in England when he was visiting his daughter. He was so cool and was happy for photos and autographs. Just thought I'd share this with you, as always wanted to call or write into the show, but live in England, so would not be able to make it if I won. Okay, cool, guys. Keep going with the show. Really enjoy it. LOL.
That's cool. That's cool to see Stone Cold Steve Austin
on a train in England.
Yeah. David Cicerso.
Cicero.
Just started listening to Review Away about a month ago and have loved pretty much every show you guys have done.
Wait a minute. That means four shows, and he's loved pretty much every show, meaning not all of them, yeah. So probably closer to half he's liked.
The SummerSlam 2004 was actually one of the few DVDs from WWE that I can watch more than once. The others, of course, being Rise and Fall of ECW, ECW Bloodsport, and ECW One Night Stand 2005. And no, I'm not really an old-school fan, just a fan of the work put into each DVD. Really helped launch Randy Orton's career and met your Chris Benoit quota for the week. Keep the shows coming. Stay away from Jersey Shore. And if I could suggest a show, I would like to hear your opinions on the infamous WCW Sin pay-per-view where Sid broke his leg.
It's actually a pretty good show, as I recall. Okay. Demond Wilson, just a suggestion, boys. I don't know if you guys have WWE Classics on demand or not in Toronto. I have Cox Cable and I'm in Southern California. Anyway, if you do, I'd like to suggest you review the pay-per-views that are featured on this channel. I totally enjoy your reviews, and if I could watch them after you did, I somehow would find it more enjoyable. I'm slightly intoxicated, so feel free to reject those ideas with extreme prejudice if needed or don't. We do get Classics on demand up here in Canada. However, after watching this Road Wild pay-per-view, I am going to go out of my way to avoid watching them there because I really do not like how they edit shit out. I would rather watch the original broadcast of something where you're not going to have shit sweetened up or if there's any fuck-ups, which I think we kind of enjoy.
Yeah, I don't know if they always change up fuck-ups, but like for legal reasons, they
have to switch up. Yeah, I understand why they have to. It kind of annoys me. But A lot of these pay-per-views are not hard to find online. Like, a lot of them are out there if you just search them out.
But I mean, I'm just personally hesitant to put them up sometimes in case someone ever comes after us at some point. But if you guys want to, somebody did this week for Road Wild, feel free. Nate Milton says, just finished listening to Review Raw. Great swerve with the Jersey Shore review, guys. I knew there was about 15 minutes left on the podcast after you wrapped up your Raw review, but I never saw that coming. Also, Snooki will always be a heel to me. She and Vinny were making an appearance at a club down here in Virginia. I asked her to dance. She turned me down, stating that she don't like black guys.
Oh.
My first thought was, how in the hell can an orange person be prejudiced against a black person? My second thought was, I probably just dodged a bullet. That chick is a hot mess, and I don't think I'd want to smush that.
Wow, what a story from Nate.
Wow. Yeah, you bring that up to TMZ. I don't like black guys.
Wow. God damn. Brian Hillhouse. Wow, John got pissed this week defending the Jersey Shore reviews. John's hardcore. I'm hardcore, too.
Ewan Ross. John is totally wrong here about Rush. They probably don't apply well to the target market, but they are huge worldwide. Even to this day, they are selling records around the globe. In 2002, Vapor Trails went to number 6 in America. They had 10 top 10 albums in America and 7 in the UK.
Jay Hunter. I'm from Ireland. I know of Rush, but don't care for them, outside of one awesome song called Tom Sawyer. I know a few guys who know of them, but none of them care either. I imagine the majority of their fans are Canadians, at least in their mid-30s, so realistically irrelevant to the wrestling scene in 2004. Some more people might know of them now through the video game Rock Band and the 2009 film I Love You Man. Yes, they were very heavily featured in that, where the protagonists go to a Rush concert.
Daniel Markey. John, I'm from Australia. I've heard of Rush, and episodes of Chuck had a Rush theme with the song Tom Sawyer. And in the movie I Love You Man, they listened to Rush music and went to a Rush concert.
Andy Simpson. Holy crap! Rush is a band loved worldwide. Has he not seen Rush in Rio? How about the recent film Rush, Beyond the Lighted Stage? Look at their record sales, singles, videos, etc., and see how well they've done outside of Canada. Plus, their version of Summertime Blues came off of their covers record Feedback, released 2004. Rush is huge around the world.
Nate Milton. Rush is big, but I think they're outside of the magic target demo of 18 to 35. Every Rush fan I've met has either been a dude in his 40s or a college kid. One of my younger friends that says that Portnoy's percussion is the opiate for the stone masses. They're not my cup of tea, but I did get a laugh out of them being mentioned on Aqua Teen Hunger Force. I was always much more of a Police guy. On a tangent, every time you post, I think Sting's listening to Review Away. On another tangent, it's crazy that Sting, the wrestler, owns the trademark to the name and not Sting, the singer. Deception. What?
Andrew Almelsuck. I butchered that name. Almelsuck. John Pollack. Well, he spelled my name wrong, so I don't feel bad anymore. John Pollack's shoot over Jersey Shore haters was off on all sorts of chains. I live in New Jersey, and I can't stand the show, but pointing out the intellectual shortcomings of that brain poison isn't at all a bad thing. I've heard all the reviews thus far, and I learned from Review of Raw last week. Great stuff, fellas. Keep it up.
Ben Brisebois. I remember liking Road Wild more than a few other pay-per-views from around that time. It had Mysterio versus Psychosis, which I realize you guys have already seen twice recently, and Juventud versus Jericho. Wikipedia says that was the longest match on the card, 16 minutes, as it should have been. And there was also Raven versus Saturn versus Canyon, and I was a huge fan of all those guys at the time. Makes up for the main event being a stupid publicity stunt. I didn't care about Hogan anyway, no matter what they were doing with him.
Travers Cummings writes, hey guys, yet another great episode of Review Away covering the 2004 SummerSlam. I enjoy Way's Dragon Ball Z references as I'm a huge fan of that series. Comparing 2004 Cena and Orton to Vegeta and Goku was priceless. Vegeta, I'm sorry, and Goku was priceless. Now here in 2010, John Cena has definitely achieved the level of Super Saiyan 4, and Orton is probably about a Super Saiyan 3. Anyway, who doesn't know anything about Dragon Ball Z will have no idea what the fuck I'm talking about. I will confirm that. But I'm sure Wei does. I'm also happy that John pretty much told all the Jersey Shore haters to shut the fuck up and stop bitching about you guys reviewing it. Like John stated, if you don't want to listen to it, turn it off after they are done talking about wrestling.
I'm glad you read that one. Bren Brisebois. WWE dubs over Alex Wright's awesome music with some generic shitty techno song. It looks like he's dancing out of sync. Road Wild isn't standing up to my memory of it, I'm not surprised, but it's still better than a few WWE pay-per-views I've seen this year. The crowd at Sturgis seemed dead for everything. I didn't watch the main event again, though. They were probably too busy with their bikes to watch Nitro and know what was going on, so I really don't understand the reasoning for those shows.
John, any confirmation of a Billy Kidman plush doll for the BK's kids meal? Last week it was the Linda McMahon commercial. This week, Raw talks about Burger King, and WWE has a deal with them.
Isn't that amazing?
That was from Matt or James.
We talk about Burger King, and suddenly, the next day, they announce a new deal.
I realize I have to go through these more better, because Nate Milton's third email is up here.
Oh, boy. Nate Milton says, if John Pollock turns out to be the GM of the Jersey Shore, we riot. I do like the Jersey Shore reviews, though. If they start reviewing the Boondocks in wrestling form, I'll mark out. Here's a hint. Uncle Ruckus is due for a face turn. I don't watch that show, so.
Bastion Booger. I'll sit through Jersey Shore reviews because John and Wei make funny jokes about the show. Though on the last review, they spent several minutes talking about wrestling after the Jersey Shore review, which I would have missed had I hit stop, like Jopo has suggested.
Well, for those of you who are unaware, TNA has now hired two wrestlers,
Rob Echoes and Becky Bayless,
to portray Jersey Shore type characters.
So there's a direct correlation now between both shows, and I think it's in our best interest to look at the progress of both.
It's our job now.
Yep.
Richard Lee. Okay, this is going to be fun. First, Pollock. Rush is one of the greatest bands ever.
That's an opinion.
I totally mark out when they're on the radio and inspired many of the best metal and alt bands in the world today. Of course you would not be a fan, damn it. Now, Wei, good job on the DBZ references there. I laughed my ass off on that one. SummerSlam 2004, a fun pay-per-view for me as it showed me what a crowd can do in a live event, and is probably the reason that WWE hasn't done a pay-per-view for a while in Canada. Now lastly, even though I did enjoy the review of Jersey Shore, it still does not do anything for me, and I will continue to avoid it at all costs, even if I type the word fuck 50,000 times to express my displeasure, it probably won't help as much as there are people who want to hear that. For a suggestion, could you try the episode of Raw that was a few weeks before SummerSlam 2004? The ones from Winnipeg where Eugene was in charge, involving musical chairs and a bounce house with Triple H. Thanks. 2112 rules, by the way.
Just listening to this week... Sorry, this is David Alm. Just listening to this week's review of Raw, review away, and Wei Ting is right. Rush is actually pretty huge worldwide. Here in Sweden, they always come to the biggest arenas, and they are widely known.
Oh, I love it. I love it. If you guys want, feel free to go back to last week's podcast, listen to the conversation John and I had about Rush, and just bask in the satisfaction, in our collected satisfaction of knowing how wrong John Pollock was. Just like he was wrong about the vultures and the crows. Don't let this up. Go nuts on your photoshopping, whatever. Let them have it. Tommy Chung. The only problem I have with the Jersey Shore reviews is that you guys make me want to watch it. Great review of SummerSlam and love the Dragon Ball Z reference from Wei. Cena would have been Goku and Orton would have been Vegeta.
Fatty McGee. Hey guys, loving the reviews. Don't listen to these guys bitching about Jersey Shore. It's an awesome show and should be looked at only as junk food for the brain, just like wrestling.
Steve Bellingham. Hey, John, I'll have to agree with Wei on this one. Rush was pretty huge worldwide. Summertime Blues was off their cover album that came out that year in 2004. Rush ranked 79th in U.S. album sales, according to the RIAA, with sales of 25 million units. Total worldwide sales approximate 40 million units.
Oh, that's just because they've been playing for like 5 decades. Anyone could do that. Jordan Welsh. Who else felt happy but meh towards Danielson returning? I'm happy he's back and maybe getting a good push, but in a few months he'll either be a jobber or a star.
That's what I felt after his match on Raw.
Yep, it's just another guy.
He's another guy. Sean Patterson, John, Rush is huge all over the world. For that comment, I need to rake you over the coals. They have 24 gold records and 14 platinum records. According to the RIAA, they rank 79th in U.S. record sales with 25 million. That's more than Nirvana, Jimi Hendrix, The Police, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Nickelback, Johnny Cash, The Who, and John Lennon. Rough worldwide figures place sales at 40 million. That answers your question to, outside of Canada, who the fuck has heard of Rush? Also, Rush's cover of Summertime Blues was released in May 21st, 2004, 2.5 months before SummerSlam. Sure is an old song. What a dated creative team, picking up a single that is 2.5 months old. Always listen to Way. He knows his music. Love the show, guys. Keep up the great work. And then a tongue sticking out, smiley face.
Well, I will not retract on my statement that it was a dated group to be using for a product that you were trying to push
at this point,
2004.
At this point, I feel kind of bad.
Why?
No, I just feel kind of bad for you. I don't want to
feel bad for me.
Keep reading these.
Let's bring them on. I will not ever admit to being a fan of Rush in the very least, and I'm actually impressed at the research some of these people went out to do over the past week. This was a very proactive response from people. No one knows this shit off the top of their heads. This was people going out and researching. Wikipedia must have been bombarded with Rush demands past week.
And as we see, if you want to gain attention, just state something crazy.
Yeah, that's
on your hot on the internet.
Yep. Robert McNulty, hey guys, only just discovered the complete genius of Review Away the past couple of weeks, so busy listening to the past shows, keep up the good work. Any chance you could review the 98 Raw where DX attacked WCW? Thought it was real cool at the time.
Chris Best, hey John and Way, just want to say I enjoyed your review of SummerSlam 2004. I had actually attended the entire weekend's festivities, which were held at Ontario Place, which included the meet and greet with Randy Orton, yelling at my friend, Chris Benoit crashing his paddle boat during some paddle boat tournament, and Fozzie putting on a killer concert. I also attended the pay-per-view, and it was my first time attending a live pay-per-view. My highlights were booing the pre-taped Diva Dodgeball, doing the wave during the Undertaker-JBL title match, and pissing off the fan sitting next to me during the Orton-Benoit title match, as he was rooting on Benoit, and I rooted for Orton. If you guys could do another event that took place in Toronto, I would love to hear your thoughts on Unforgiven 06, which was another pay-per-view I attended. Keep up the good work, guys.
Another one from Bastion Booger. Yo, John and Way, please review the Raw episode where Mae Young gives birth to a hand. That would be such a funny episode of Review Away. There was so much crap on that show. The Booger Man likes it when you make fun of terrible wrestling, and I think that ranks up there with one of the worst angles ever. Okay, he continues here. This is going to be a new rule here on Review Away, because we're starting to get a proliferation of people on this Facebook group mm-hmm. who want to become characters. It's really fucking annoying, and it's even more annoying when you write your letters as a character, and it's just, this one isn't that bad, because he makes, like, decent points here, but for those out there, we're probably going to avoid the characters that people are going to try and create. I really find it annoying.
We want reality.
Yeah. This isn't.
Plus, we just have
this isn't a Rush concert where we let anybody in.
Plus, we have too much to get through.
Yeah. He goes on to say, wrestling fans often give Vince Russo a little bit of credit for the Attitude Era, but he really doesn't deserve any, in my opinion. I can't remember if Russo had anything to do with the Mae Young giving birth to a hand storyline, but even if he didn't, I still blame him and his horrible influence in wrestling for it. The Attitude Era's success had more to do with huge stars like Steve Austin, Goldberg, and The Rock than it did with Russo's lame-ass Jerry Springer-style booking. The fact that he's gainfully employed in the wrestling business is an absurdity of epic proportions. In Russo's fairness, he had left the WWE by this point when they did the Mae Young angle. I think he had his strong points and he had his negative points in that late 90s, but I think you do have to give him some credit for that period of wrestling where a change was drastically needed, and he was a focal point of that change.
Jack Pisco, on the Raw review, I think the Nexus is done. This angle was doomed the moment Cena, last son of Krypton, won the match on the last pay-per-view. Nexus looked even more weak on Raw, with every one of them being punked out by Cena's brand of comedy. Hated that shit. What was worse was Darren Young being exiled, leaving them a man down, while almost everyone else squeaking out lame-ass wins, which leaves them back to NXT level, in my eyes. The new tag belts look fugly, but since they are no tag teams to defend them against, we won't see them too much, thankfully. Randy's beatdown on Sheamus came across really, really well, so looking forward to their next match. The guest hosts sucked donkey balls, as usual. Is it so much to ask them to prep some talking points? With Jillian's win, I wonder if she'll get the push to feud with Malini after beating Julie Jitsu in another number one contenders match. One can only hope. Now on to something more enjoyable, the Jersey Shore. And he just gives his thoughts on the Jersey Shore. I know a lot of you guys hate it, so I won't bore you to death.
All right. Keep going here. Rob King writes, how can you guys be so selfish when it comes to including the Jersey Shore reviews on Raw? Did you ever think of the people who download your show at work and have limits on how much they can download? And maybe your 20 minutes of Jersey Shore crap puts them over their download limit and gets someone fired from their job. Is talking about this shitty-ass show more important than someone losing their job? Very selfish of you. Yeah, I'm reaching here. But still, if you didn't do the Jersey Shore, that would be awesome. At least do the Raw review, viewer feedback for Raw, Jersey Shore review, and then Jersey Shore feedback. Annoying, have to find where the Shore review ends and the feedback section starts each week. And while I'm not a huge fan of Rush, they are definitely huge worldwide. Well, on the Tuesday show, we review Raw, and then we review Jersey Shore. It's that simple.
Yeah, and then, but he's commenting that we sometimes talk about wrestling after the Jersey Shore. I don't know. I don't know. I can't stop.
But we
myself.
Talk about wrestling as a result of what's happened on Jersey Shore. We wouldn't be talking about it if something didn't spark that debate coming out of our Jersey Shore review.
Perhaps we can put on a notice saying wrestling talk starts at this time. And stops at this time, and then continues at this time again. I don't know. I can't do it. I don't know how to do it. Perhaps a listener out there can take the show and then re-edit it, remix it, so that it's only wrestling.
The reason we're reviewing Jersey Shore is we're putting a wrestling spin to it. So obviously we're going to talk about wrestling at some point in relation to the Jersey Shore.
And also it's a direct competitor to TNA Impact.
Yeah, absolutely. They go head-to-head.
Okay.
Starting next week, everyone, we're also, this season, we're going to be reviewing Monday Night Football.
Stephen Goodridge. Hi, John and Wayne. Great reviews as per usual. Particularly enjoyed the One Night Stand review the week before last. Wading into the Jersey Shore debate. I love the show and sure would have loved the reviews, but MTV UK hasn't started airing Season 2 so far, so I've been trying to avoid spoilers. No problem with it appearing at the end of the Raw review, though. Nor should anyone else. Also, one more thing. Is there any way the Raw review could be put on iTunes? I'm a lazy fucker and hate having to get my laptop out and download the thing. What is the problem with that one?
The issue with iTunes right now is that we have our account and we can only put X amount of content on there a month. We are like maxed right now with the law and review away.
Yeah.
So adding a new thing on, we have to get more space essentially for it. So as of right now, that's our situation, everyone, right now. If everyone wants to contribute a fee to pay for more space, we would love to. But as of right now, it would be me having to spend that money.
And what is the fee? Or do I not want to get into it? Okay. Devin Clark, Jillian Hall's WWE record.
And sorry, on top of that, if anyone out there has another alternative we can do in regards to iTunes, feel free to email me.
Absolutely, absolutely. Devin Clark, Jillian Hall's WWE record, 27 wins, 1 draw, 93 losses.
No idea how you found that out, Devin. And Richard Holm finishes off. Congrats on another milestone this Sunday.
There's another.
Oh, is there more?
Yeah.
The 50th episode of Review Away. Wow, this was number 50.
This is number 50,
Christ,
yes.
There's a lot more feedback.
That's right. Chris Kunkel. Thanks for all the well wishes, guys. This is Chris who
is in Afghanistan
serving
right now.
It's nice to know how many supporters we service members still have. It's past the middle of the night here, and I'm on long enough to check my email, download Review Raw, and post this. Gotta sleep sometime. I'm going to try and post on here at least weekly, but there's no guarantee. Anyway, SummerSlam was good, although my definition of a good wrestling show has diminished over the last few years, and the review away this week was hilarious. I always loved when the WWE ran shows in Bizarro World, as it always made for an interesting environment. Can't wait for the Road Wild review, as I can remember these as being god-awful shows.
Evan Bell, just in case someone hasn't already mentioned this, the fan who shouted, "I hate you, Heath Slater, I hate you," is at Frank WWE Clown on Twitter. So it's at Frank WWE Clown on Twitter. Someone to look for in the future, I guess.
Alex Watts. Here's a story I always like to share in 2003. In 2003, I was getting ready to go to a WWE Raw house show in Charlottetown. And before the show, my mom wanted to take me out to eat at this somewhat famous local dinner. And to my shock, every wrestler that was on the show was there. I remember when I saw them all, I was somewhat young and almost had a heart attack. There was not anyone really that huge at the time there. The one I ended up... Oh, this is so... Fuck. This guy's probably still very young. Like, I'm having trouble. Okay. There was not anyone really that huge at the time there. The one I ended up talking with the most was Randy Orton, believe it or not. I talked about his match with HBK that year, and his match at the 2003 SummerSlam. I just had some sort... What? I talked about his match with HBK that year, and his match at the 2003 SummerSlam. I just had some short talk with a few other wrestlers, such as Kane, RVD, Test, Booker T. I saw a few others, but they were all talking to other people, so I ended up getting shy and going back to have my dinner. It was a day that I won't soon forget. His comma button must be broken or something.
That one was a repeat. And we'll finish off with Jay Hunter. I'm from Ireland and never hear anyone talking about Rush. Maybe it's just a demographic I never meet. But I never see or hear people talking about or going to a Rush concert or playing their music in any bars or shops. I got their best of to try and get into them, but it's not my cup of tea at all. I'm 27. What age are you? Do you hear their stuff played anywhere? Oh, and popular amongst a niche market like wrestling isn't actually popular. Okay, and his last two lines make no sense. So thank you, Jay, thank you everybody for your feedback there. There was quite a lot of it, and we appreciate all your feedback, whether it be positive or negative towards me. It's always welcome here on the show. Next week, it is back to your choice, Way.
It is.
Pick a review.
And seeing as how it is our 50th episode, we should celebrate it with a contest. It's been a while since had one.
Come up with one?
Yes, I have.
Okay, great.
While watching, it coincides with what I wanted to review. And because while watching this show, we notice a lot of times when the WWE would change up the music because of legal reasons. Music is a big part of every wrestling show. So my review I would like to do is the 2005 or 2006 WWE CD, WWE Originals, where you have a bunch of guys on the roster record and sing their own songs. And it comes with a DVD, so I'd like to listen to the thing, and we'll review the DVD as well for the first time. We'll do a music review. And the contest I'd like to do is, you know, for those of you who listen to our Raw review, you know how much I hate R-Truth theme song. I'd like to do a contest where I put the challenge out there to all of you to write your own verse for What's Up, the R-Truth theme song. And next week on the show, John Pollock and myself will personally rap all of your verses to the beat, and we will pick the best verse for a prize.
Awesome. Okay, well, cool. We have a contest for next week.
Yeah, I'll put the link up to the instrumental on the site after this podcast goes up.
And we will do our first music review next week on Review Away. We encourage everybody to spread the word about this podcast. Bug your friends, spam message boards, whatever you have to do to tell them about the law, Review Away, Review a Raw. And all, as always, you can go join us on our Facebook group, ReviewAway.com, ReviewAWAI.com. And going out here, Way, I heard this song this past week. It might, in fact, be the worst song of 2010. The best way I can describe it is Linkin Park singing an Ultimate Warrior promo. And it's their new song called Catalyst.
God bless us, everyone.